Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Josh Norris, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect podcast. And this week, we're going to take a look at two of the best players in AAA, diving in, kind of deep diving, I would say, in some ways, on Royals first baseman outfielder Jack Caglione and Brewers right-hander Jacob Mizorowski. We're sitting here at the very end of May as we record this, and these are two of the guys. We could pick out some other ones too, but these are two of the guys who I would say have really stood out so far this season. But on top of that are guys that we do the chats at Baseball America. We get the question pretty much every week, like, okay, is this the week that Jack's coming up? Is this the week that Mizorowski is going to come up? A little insight on that. You know, questions that are actually one of the hardest to answer is that, because the answer is we don't know. Until the day they come up, generally those are kind of the kind of things that are often also situation dependent, right? Like, when are the Brewers going to call up Jacob Mizorowski? A lot of that depends on when do they need a starting pitcher, and when do they need a starting pitcher and Logan Henderson can't fill that role, or they've got a number of options. So a lot of times these timetables are tricky, but what we're going to do more than that today. We're not going to give you that Jack Caglione will be up on June 14th or whatever it is, and watch, now he'll come up on June 14th. But that's not what we're going to do. But we're going to talk about the players, what to look for now, what maybe still is there to be done. But Jeff, Josh, great to see you. It's very rainy here in North Carolina this week, so as you can say, a little bit out of Josh's window, it does mean that we're going to have a little bit of a tougher time this week with baseball in person, because I was thinking about maybe going to a game tonight, and I am not going to a game tonight because it's supposed to rain all day tonight. So we'll see about that, but great to see you guys as always. Before we dive into our two, you know, prospects that we're really going to look in depth at today, I'll just throw it out. What is the coolest thing that you've seen? It's almost the end of May. What's the coolest thing, the most interesting thing you've seen prospect wise so far this month? Josh, anything come to mind for you?
I have not seen a whole lot of baseball this month, if you can believe it. I think I've only seen 3 games. Just the way schedules have worked. I mean, I saw Carlos Legrandhe throw 8 consecutive fastballs over 100 miles an hour. So that was pretty cool.
I mean, I knew zero of which were swung and missed at, I do believe.
Yes, you also there were 24. I mean, I think I mentioned it in our Slack. 24 fastballs in the first inning of his game and got 0 swings and misses or something like that. I think he didn't get a swing and miss on a fastball till like the last inning he pitched. We've joked in our Slack that I am one of the most efficient coolers of prospects in the world. And I did happen to get the worst outing of that young man's career, if you judge by earned runs. But he threw the ball hard, and that was kind of neat. I've seen Jesus Mate, and he's pretty good. Just in general, I don't think he did anything that I saw a couple games there, and as soon as I stopped going to that series, Luis Pena went bananas. So more affect my cooling ways. But Jeff, how about you?
Yeah, I think, you know, just from an interesting perspective, it's still Gerangelo Shanta. Just, you know, what he's done, I think particularly in the right-handed starts, he's still dominating in those outings. If you go and you kind of dig into the game logs, you'll see that the majority, I think 50% of his earned runs this season have come over 3 lefty-only relief outings. So it's really the only time that he's getting hit. And, you know, I do think that it's something that just from an interest standpoint to your run of the mill borderline baseball fan, general sports fan, it's something that will capture their attention. And I don't think that it's out of the realm of possibility that the switch pitching thing could be something that continues as he matriculates up. You know, it's just interesting how he deploys the left-handed side of everything. Because I think as JJ and I discussed kind of coming into the season, it's sort of like strategic in the sense of like you get a lefty or somebody who can't hit lefty breaking balls. I dug in a little bit to Jace Laviolette's underlying numbers this weekend. He might be a guy that Shanta would throw nothing but lefty on left breaking balls to because he has like a 60% whiff rate against lefty spin. So it might be somebody like that. Or if he needs a ground ball, the velocity's up on the left side that it's actually more mid-90s now than it was in college. And it's consistently that. There's power from the right side. I think ultimately, if he's just a right-handed only pitcher, he's a big leaguer. But there is this element that just makes him so interesting that when he had an afternoon game, because obviously Northwest League, Josh, you know, you understand how living on the East Coast, those are late games. That's not something my nine-year-old who loves baseball and wants to watch prospects and figure out who the teams are every night when I'm watching games in my office. This weekend, you know, he pitched a matinee game and I was able to be like, hey, sit down and watch this guy. He throws with both arms. And it's fascinating to people that he can do that. And so I don't know where this shakes out, but it remains the most interesting thing that I see on MILB from a week in, week out basis is his starts and sort of where does this go? Because I don't think, you know, Pat Verdeete is a good example as to like what his future is because it's just not the same.
Pat Venditti.
See, I can't remember the dude's name, and I knew I butchered it, and I just kind of swallowed
it. Venditti only made – Venditti was a switch pitcher, and if you made him a right-hander or a left-hander, neither of those were realistically good enough to get him to the big leagues that way, right?
Like, he did get to the big leagues, yeah.
I'm saying, but he had to be a switch pitcher to do so, right? Like, if you said – as a right-hander, he's going to face lefties, or as a lefty, he's going to face righties. He wasn't a big league pitcher. Cinch is going to be much more interesting, I think, because he is just purely as a right-handed pitcher. That's a big leaguer. But you add in this little wrinkle, like you said, and you can, by the way, in the same game, as Jeff mentioned, you can see he may face one time he faces this lefty, he's facing him throwing right-handed. The next guy's a lefty and he's throwing him left-handed. It's really kind of cool. I'm not going to say the best thing I saw this month in the minors, I would say, is Mizorowski. So I'll save that for when we talk about Mizorowski. But we're not going to go there first because as we record this on Tuesday afternoon, Jack Caglione got yesterday off. But before that, he hit 5 homers in 4 games. He has a 19-game hitting streak. He has actually been better so far since he reached AAA Omaha than he was at AA Northwest Arkansas. And by the way, he was really good at Northwest Arkansas. So this kind of leads to the question, like the question that Royals fans are asking, understandably, is it time for Jack to come up to Kansas City? And Jeff, I'll kind of start that question by saying, let's focus on the bat first, because then the second question that becomes interesting we'll get to is, could he play the outfield? Because that's really it. We'll get to that. But if that's really where, if he could do that, that's where they have a bigger need, I would say, as well. Ideally, if he could play the outfield. But I'll go to you first, Jeff. As far as Jack the hitter, what are you seeing and what, you know, kind of stands out? Let's start with the positives. What are the things that if you haven't been following Jack daily, you know, day by day, what are the things that are his calling cards?
Yeah, I think it's just it starts and kind of ends with just the elite quality of contact, the elite power that he produces. I think we throw 90th percentile and max EVs and all that sort of stuff out there to try to get a gauge on where power sort of ranks in comparison to major league guys. This is one of the few players that I truly believe you know, he can hit enough that this matters, because we've had other guys that have hit the ball extremely hard, you know, in Judge, Stanton, Ohtani territory. I think this is another guy that's going to be putting up those sort of EVs. So going away, it's going to be 80 power, right? Right off the bat, it's 80 power. There's always been bat to ball ability. The big question with Cags has always been, is he going to, you know, swing himself into more outs than he needs to necessarily make? It's a big zone. He's a bigger guy. He likes to get extended out there. He can't hit stuff on, you know, the outer half of the plate and sort of the gray zone. But the issue is, you know, once you get up in the upper levels and you start to see professional pitchers who can land their breaking balls, who can land their secondaries, who have good fastball command and good traits, you know, that works a lot less. You know, he's still aggressive up there. I wouldn't say that he's not overzealous or swing happy, but it's been tampered down a little bit from the guy that we saw at Florida. And some of that's probably the competition. Some of it is, you know, not swinging a metal bat, I'm sure, too, or really anything he probably made contact with was going to sail. But there's bat to ball ability here and there's huge power. I'm still questionable about how good the approach is, but I do think he has enough bat to ball ability, and, you know, he's big enough and long enough, and, you know, his arms and levers are big enough that he can cover so much of the plate that maybe it doesn't matter so much. And it's also a guy that, because of the kind of power he has, I think eventually people will probably pitch around him a little bit more and the walks will probably just naturally rise. So I think just an overall explosive middle of the order type of power hitter without sort of the prerequisite swing and miss concerns that you typically get with guys that have power like this. And I mean, he has such insane power that I don't even care so much about the angles, you know, like he's got a, whatever, 44% ground ball rate this year, which is fine. He just hits the ball so hard that even like kind of his miss hits travel further than you think. And, you know, could do a lot more damage than you expect, even on the ground, just because the ball's coming at you so quick. So, I think, you know, just from a hitting perspective, I have little questions that he's a big league everyday regular. And I think that there's, you know, perennial home run crown competitor sort of upside here where, you know, he could be hitting 40 plus every year.
So Josh, Jeff hit on a little bit of this, but this is also like the, where this gets tricky is that we are talking about someone who's still has a very small resume in pro ball, great resume in college baseball. Let's just grant that like college baseball, you could do little, it's hard to do, have a much more impressive, especially at the plate. His draft year was really exceptional, but he was in the AFL, then double A, now triple A. And there still are, like Jeff mentioned a little bit, but there still are kind of some things to watch for with him, some kind of room still for development. Is there not?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true of literally every player in the minor leagues and also a lot of them in the big leagues. But, you know, it's not a perfect prospect just yet. I talked to a scout about him the other day, and he mentioned, obviously, the power is there. He's probably a first baseman and not an outfielder. But there are holes. For a guy that big, with that kind of swing, there are going to be holes. He cited general issues against left-handers. Fastballs and changeups from right-handers can disrupt him. If you put them in the proper spots, you can pitch to him in, but it has to be really in. We talked about it right before the podcast. Changeups from right-handers are a little bit of an issue, and I saw that firsthand in the fall league. So it's not like it's going to be, you know, a plus hitter, I don't think, but he's certainly going to be better than I thought he was going to be. And he certainly has exceeded all my expectations coming into the year. I mean, I've seen nothing but bad Jack. I saw him post like College World Series at the college national team, and he got absolutely carved by whichever, I think it was Taiwan who was there, and just spun him into the ground for 2 days. And then I saw him in the fall league, and basically anything with a wrinkle, at least in front of me was a problem. So I was thinking, okay, this is probably not a guy who gets the ball very far occasionally. And, you know, someone mentioned to me, like, you're trying to avoid late career Joey Gallo with him, which is probably the floor at this point. And I don't know, maybe your ceiling is prime Adam Dunn. Like, I'm, you know, that's my favorite player. So that's high praise. But a guy you can, maybe a three true outcome type player, which would be really a pretty good one if Dunn had a pretty good career. But either way, he's making his mark really quick. And I understand where all the questions are coming from about when's he going to be promoted, when's he going to be promoted. I would say generally I'm more conservative in that regard. Like, it has been only a week. It's been a great week in AAA, but, you know, I would give him more than a week.
So along what you're saying, altogether this year against fastballs, Jack is hitting 400, 452, 725. With 93 plate appearances, 5 doubles, 7 home runs, 8 walks, 12 Ks, you know, where the it resolves on a fastball. To kind of going to what you're saying there, I don't know at this point, but especially in the majors, I just don't see him seeing him getting fastballs. Like, if you are facing Jack and you are throwing him a fastball, you are doing him a favor. He will turn on it. He will hit it very hard. Bringing up this graphic that we worked up from our Synergy Sports data, these are the swings and misses that he has this year. And if you look at those, you see those blue dots, lefty sliders away, and then those, then changeups down from right-handers are his two weaknesses right now that I would say. And two things that have not in any way hampered him so far in any significant way in the minors, but are things that you probably would have to watch in the majors, because while the scouting does get better and better as you go up the levels, you do hit a point where the major leagues, it's going to be even more so. And again, especially he's already, the day he arrives in the majors, there's no part of this 40, 50 years ago would have been, okay, let's see how well he can handle a big league fastball. Nowadays, there is no reason to even ask that question. Jack can handle a big league fastball. Yes. Okay. Maybe if you're Tarek Skubal and you know, you're throwing your best, maybe you can handle him with that, because that's everybody, but your normal run of the mill pitcher, don't throw him a fastball. He'll kill it. He'll destroy it. He'll hit it 450 plus feet. As Jeff, you know, made the point, like, he hits the ball exceptionally hard so that everything he hits is hard. But, you know, again, there's some polish to be added here. That's true for, like Josh said, for every minor leaguer in some way. The other thing I did want to ask, though, because I think without question, he's a better fit at first base. But I'm going to ask the question about his defense, because right now, as we record this, Kyle Isbell leads all Royals outfielders 3 home runs. Jack, that Jack could do that in a game. You know, like, I mean, legitimately could do that in a game. He hasn't in this strong, but he has hit 5 in the past 4 games in AAA. He would provide a level of power that does not currently exist in that Royals outfit. And I asked that question because Salvador Perez DHs a lot now because they have Freddie Fermin behind the plate. Vinny Pasquantino is one of the better hitters in the, in their lineup. So at first base. So it's not like they couldn't figure out a way where Jack could play some first base and some DH, but obviously if he can play right or left field, that would make it a little bit easier clearing his path. I watched, I think it's 35 plays now that where Jack has fielded a ball, touched a ball in the outfield so far this year. And that includes ground balls through the infield where he is fully capable of scooping up a grounder that gets to the outfield and throwing it back in. No problem. Actually, left-handed. Throwing it back in. No problem at all. Not an issue. Jeff, you watched him a lot too. I liked how you described it. I would say the way I would put it is, if you were playing in a small park without much room to cover, I think he could be below average but passable out there. That would not seem to be the description of Royal Stadium, which is one of the biggest outfields in baseball. But what's your sense as you've watched him run around in the outfield now? I think 10 games now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we know that he moves fine for his size, but he's not
below average speed.
Yeah, this isn't a guy like a Judge or someone like that, where if you clock him on a home to first, maybe it's slow, but then you get him onto a Hawkeye system and you're getting, you know, feet per second and you're like, okay, yeah, this guy actually does move.
Once he gets going, he can move.
Exactly. Like once he's underway. And that in the outfield, honestly, that's one of the biggest components of just playing any of those positions, right, is being able to actually move out there. When we go back and we look at like draft grades and the guys that are, you know, grading out highly in the big leagues or grading out highly in the minor leagues, when we do get some access to like the advanced defensive numbers, particularly in the outfield, where I think they can measure some of those routes and efficiency and stuff a little bit more with a little bit more certainty than in the infield. You just see that speed is what translates. So he's not going to play center. I think right field or a spacious corner, depending upon what the park is, of course. But like he's not going to play right field in Fenway Park. Kauffman, of course, isn't a great outfield for a guy like this. Coors wouldn't be a great outfield for a guy like this. The things that he does have going for him is he does kind of track the ball well enough. His hands are fine. I don't think it's that. It is awkward routes. And as I described to you, it's almost like he catches a lot of stuff like over his shoulder, almost as if he's catching a football downfield. It looks wide receiver-ish in terms of how he's catching fly balls, which is weird.
It's his left hand catching it over his right shoulder a lot of times.
Yeah, because you'll see guys maybe like take a route where they have to change direction, but they're still usually coming, you know, they're catching the ball out in front. They're not really catching it sort of at where their body is or even over their shoulder, you know, Willie Mays style or whatever. Like, and there's, so it's awkward stuff like that. The other positive part that I'll say for Jack is the fact that he has a huge arm. Obviously he had the injury and the TJ. So
when you say that huge arm injury,
I don't know if the arm is going to play the way it was, but if it does come back to full strength, I think it is at least a tool out there.
When you say huge arm, now we are talking 10 games. We are, and in those 10 games, like I will say, like watching all those plays, there's been two or three difficult plays in those 10 games. Like I will tell you right now, if you hit a fly ball straight to Jack Caglione, he can catch it. So, okay, right there. That puts him above. Like there are some guys who we've seen they do experiments in the outfield and you're like, no, 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 that's not him. There's a couple of things we've seen. Like there was a triple, one of the two tough, difficult plays he's had. There was a triple that really was the center fielder's ball, but Jack went to the wall as well. If he'd have stayed back, cause he wasn't, you know, he was called off on it. If he'd stayed back a couple more feet, the ball hit off the wall and rolled right past him for a triple, where a little more experience, a little more time out there, he maybe does that a little differently. But overall, what we just, you know, there was one other play where he went down the right field line and he overruns a little bit, then reaches back, as you said, as Jeff said, he can make a catch like that. But with the arm, we haven't seen it yet. I mean, he's had very few throws, but the ones he has had, every one of them's bounced, right? There's yet to be one throw I've seen from the outfield. And TrackMan, like, you know, the Hawkeye data for AAA, I don't even have a throw that qualifies yet. He's only been there 1 week to even look at. But what I would say with all of this is that the arm may be there, but I don't know because I haven't seen it. When he's had a ball where he has to throw it in, I'm not seeing like what we, you know, a plus arm. I'm seeing maybe he's let it, you know, I don't know. Again, I just don't know if it's in there right now. As you said, he's coming off of, you know, an arm injury.
Yeah. I mean, he was injured this time last year. You know, I don't know how much they limited his throwing. When we talked to him this off season on the Hot Sheet show, he kind of hadn't closed the door on pitching ever again, which I thought was a little surprising. but he is somebody that hit 100 miles an hour. So, like, I mean, we know that there is arm strength there. And I mean, didn't this happen with Joe Adell? Didn't Joe Adell have an arm injury his senior year in high school? The throwing was down and then eventually sort of came back.
I remember seeing him at 95 at TOS off the mound. And then if I do remember, though, I don't think he pitched that senior year. Maybe that I mean, I don't want to say yes or no, because maybe I forget. But it's an interesting question, you know. But at the same time, I would say, I guess the way kind of I would say it right now is if you told me that he could play outfield occasionally on the road for the Royals, I'd probably buy that more at home. I do remember Eric Hosmer playing in the outfield some when they had, you know, like, okay, how are we going to get everyone to, because I think that was the year they had Kendrew Morales also, I believe. So they did do that a little bit, if I remember right. But the Royals have a big outfield. It's hard for me to imagine Jack's going to be an everyday corner at Kauffman Stadium, but we'll see, you know. But so that's one of the two knocking on the door prospects we want to touch on. We're going to cover the other one right after this quick break.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
So, we've talked about big power at the plate, Jack Caglione. When we talk about big power on the mound, there are a few pitchers who can hit that, who can touch that more than Jacob Mizrowski. Actually, you could even say as among starters, Tarris Skubal just had that amazing start where he threw 102.6 for his final pitch. And everyone was talking about how that was the hardest pitch by a starter, blah, 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 in the majors. Because 10 days before that, Jacob Mizrowski reached back in the sixth inning, 75th pitch, if I remember correctly, of the game. Jacob Mizrowski reached back for 103.0 miles an hour measured by Hawkeye in AAA to strike out Luken Baker. When you talk about, this has been true for Jacob Mizrowski for several years, but when we talk about one of the hardest throwing starting pitchers in baseball, Jacob Mizrowski's absolutely fit into that for years now. He's at the top end of his velocity right now. But Josh, the other thing that stands out this year, and this is the thing I think that we've been looking forward and hoping to see, which is that next step forward when it comes to control, that next step forward when it comes to that feel for pitching. I feel like we're starting to see that with Jacob Mizrowski this year. And that's a very encouraging sign, both for him and for the Brewers.
No kidding. I think I went on a Milwaukee radio show and they asked me a question about Mizrowski's future. And I kind of demurred a little bit and said, you know, the easy one to comp is Dellin Betances, a guy who can be impact out of the bullpen with a big frame and he might never control command it. And I think from that point on, he has been absolutely nails in terms of like going long into games and controlling and commanding. So you're welcome, Brewers fans. I gave him the kiss of life.
This is where you were a reverse cooler.
Yeah, it was heating is I think the term. But he's been a man on fire the last few starts. And I can understand all the questions of is he ready? Is he ready? Is he ready? But you know what? I trust the Brewers to tell me when he's ready. Like they just sent down Logan Henderson, who had hard to do a lot better than he had done in his first few big league starts. Also, you'd have to, I think, make a move to get Mizrowski on the 40. Tell me if I'm wrong.
I will say this for him. I think he's ready. I've watched, I believe, each of his last like five starts because he's really fun to watch. Yeah, he is not on the 40-man, so it would be a 40-man roster move as well. But the thing that, as you said, like he, the thing that's kind of added to another step for him, as I see it, is we're seeing him pitch now. The key thing to me, the thing that we could say about Tarek Skubal, like I wrote about this twice now in the past 2 weeks, it's really fun to write about this. For all the complaints of, oh, all these starting pitchers now are five-inning turn and burn, max effort on every pitch, who get hurt, you know, the comments every time like, oh, you know, TJ incoming, all this. When Tarek Skubal got that 94-pitch CG last weekend, he didn't throw over 100 regularly. He did it when he needed it. And by the way, then at the last pitch, like, hey, I'm going to show what I really have in the tank. But he sat 97, 98. And it's crazy to think that someone could sit 97, 98 and not be throwing at max effort, but he's not. That's Jacob Mizorowski now, too. In that start against Memphis, he had six pitches over 100 miles an hour, and they were all against the top hitters in the lineup in key situations. He sat 97, 98. He's throwing a lot more strikes than he did before. He, if you just kind of put it all together, he's a guy who is starting to show feel for pitching. And useful reminder, I watched him in spring training this year. I watched him at the Prospect Showdown game. And I remember talking to a scout friend of mine after the game and saying, I've seen Mizorowski now for like 3 years in a row where I feel like he's just kind of the same pitcher that I've seen over and over. And I'm waiting for him to show that next step. Kind of, I guess I was doing my version of the heater also, Josh, at least my, you know, so I was like kind of that same boat and thinking maybe he just is a reliever if he can't, you know, unlock another level. He's kind of unlocked that now. Jeff, like when you look at him, what do you see right now? Because the thing that stands out to me is where I thought he would be a power dominating reliever, that ability to carry, to not just carry velo, but succeed, thrive with location and 97, 98, and then reach back for 102, 103 when he needs it, to have that with secondaries, you know, secondary offerings. This does feel like a starter now. And it doesn't just feel like a starter. This feels like a potentially elite starter.
Yeah. I think, you know, you're getting sort of, you always had the stuff there. There were always traits. There was deception. We saw the swing and miss. It was, you know, how many times can this guy get through a lineup? Is it going to just be one and he's going to be a multi-inning, like, you know, fire breathing dragon out of the pen? Or, you know, will it begin to sort of take shape and form and look a little bit more like a starter? We've been seeing that. I mean, the last two starts, he didn't go super deep. Prior to that, we had 5-5, 6-5, 6, 6 2/3 and 7. So when you look at it on its face, he's getting deeper into starts. He's efficient. He's throwing a lot more strikes. You know, the walks have not really been a major issue, particularly over like the last seven or so starts. He's still getting the strikeouts. He's got the ability to get ground balls as well. Just think, you know, you take a look at what you're getting right now at the highest level of the minors. And I would say because of the challenge system, it's not AutoZone, but because of the challenge system, the degree of difficulty with the AAA zone is a little bit harder than it is in any other level of the minors. And I even think in certain circumstances, it could probably squeeze you a little bit more than what you're going to get in the major leagues. So I do think that we've seen this consistently where it used to be hitters were sort of ahead of pitchers coming from AAA to the majors. Now it seems like there's a bigger adjustment period for hitters. We've seen less of an adjustment for pitchers. I think he's sort of poised for success, and this looks like another one of these Brewers pitching development success stories where a guy had relief risk questions and it lingered for a bit. And then all of a sudden he flips a switch, the strikes are there, and he turns into one of the better pitchers in baseball. I mean, we've seen it three times already, you know, with Woodruff, with Burns, and then with Peralta.
I think, well, Peralta, there's a guy that I really wish I had been more aggressive on, because you could see that in low A, but with Mizorowski, I was just looking up something on Synergy, and here's a fun stat for you. He has his strike call to strike swing ratio. It's almost 50-50. 136 called strikes, 137 swings and misses, which is, I mean, I don't have the technical skills to do that kind of research. I think someone on this podcast might. But I can't imagine there's a starter with that kind of split. That's patently insane as a starting pitcher.
And we found that called strikes are basically, you know, research has shown called strike, you should consider those essentially the same as swings and misses. You know, when you talk about the effectiveness, right? It's different than foul. Foul balls are a different story. Foul balls aren't necessarily a great indicator, but called strikes are. The stat I'll pull out with that is, and I love looking at strike percentage. I think that people, I know it's harder to find. Walk percentage tells you something. Strike percentage tells me to me something more. Cause the example I love to use, Jackson Jobe last year, Jackson Jobe had the best strike percentage basically of any starter in the minors in 2023. In 2024, there was all this talk about, oh, his walk rate's too high. Jackson Jobe has poor control. Jackson Jobe never had poor control. Jackson Jobe's strike percentage was still among the highest in the minors. You could say that there was some pitch order issues, that maybe he was trying to be too fine or whatever in two strike counts, whatever you want to say. But I look at strike percentage as kind of being this really key underlying number that tells you, can a guy throw strikes? Jacob Mizorowski came into last year, he threw 59% strikes. 62-63% is your normal minor league strike percentage. 59 is really bad. And that was not unusual. 59 the year before that, 57, 58. Never was it 60% before this year. 60% is not enough. 60% is you are headed to the pen. This year it's 65%. 65% is you are an above average strike thrower. Now, if you're above average strike thrower who throws 100 when you need it and you have a breaking ball and you all this, it's even more so. But if I wanted one stat to sum up why, like, I feel like Jacob Mizorowski is really knocking on the door and really ready, I love the fact that he has worked 7 innings in an outing in the minors so far this year. That's a nice thing to see. I love the fact that he's had 99 pitches in an outing this year in the minors. So he's been worked up to basically a full major league workload. I get it. The Brewers would have to make a 40-man roster move. The Brewers, for all the concerns coming into the season about their pitching, they have sent Tobias Myers down because they needed, you know, to move arms around. They've sent Logan Henderson down. Chad Patrick's been really good. That doesn't seem to be a whole lot of an issue right now for them. But at the same time, if the Brewers make the playoffs, I expect to see Jacob Mizorowski starting a game for them in the postseason, because this is the kind of stuff that just wins you games at the big league level. Again, he's a fun one to pay attention to. And that leads us, before we wrap this up, we do our prospect soapboxes. This is where we talk about a player who's not on our top. The rule is you can only talk about a player once throughout the podcast series. And so I can't talk about Chandler Simpson again, even if I want to. And on top of that, he can't be a top 100 prospect either. We're not talking about the best prospects here. We're talking about guys who could be on the 100 at some point. But I will start us off today and just say, do this one pretty quickly, but I don't want to hit it too many. I did Chandler Simpson, but I do want to do another Ray, which is Ian Seymour gave up a home run to a left-handed hitter in his most recent start. I believe that was Marcelo Meyer, if I remember correctly. Yeah, it was. It was Marcelo Meyer. That's only the second home run he's ever given up in pro ball to a left-handed hitter. I'd bring him up. I don't think he is a top 100 prospect. I don't think he ever will be. But he is a funky, great changeup, strike-throwing lefty who's a bulk inning guy who I think is pretty close to ready to help the big league club for the Rays as a reliever slash, you know, opener slash bulk inning pitcher, because that changeup, that fastball changeup pairing, which does not light up a radar gun. He's 91, 92 most times. but that changeup really works. It's really good. He throws a ton of strikes with location. I think it will work if you're not trying to ask him to turn the lineup over multiple times. I think he's pretty close to ready to do that. That's my prospect soapbox for today. Ian Seymour of the Rays. Josh, what about for you?
Well, I'm going to pick a guy who I think is very close to the top 100. And I stumped for him on Slack to be one of the next ups. Spoiler alert, it was Jonah Tong who did make the cut. But I stumped for Eduardo Quintero of the Dodgers. And you know, he was our number one prospect in the Arizona Complex League last year, in a pretty decent Arizona Complex League. And right now he is on, the word is fire, in low A Rancho Cucamonga. The stat I like to use is right now I am 40 years old. The last time he did not get on base, I was 39 years old. And like, it's been a while. So my birthday is in April, so it's been a while. I do have the stats in front of me. He is on a 28-game on-base streak from April 17th through May 25th, which is right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sixth longest in the minors. He is doing damage. He's getting more balls in the air. He is hitting it hard. He is hitting it often. And I think he deserves, he definitely already is. He's already a top 10 prospect in the Dodgers system. Mentioned with the Zaire Hopes and the Josue De Paulas and the increasingly Mike Sirotas of the world. So when people do ask me, when is he going to get promoted? Not a whole lot of room in the inn in Great Lakes right now.
Yeah, Kendall George also in Great Lakes, their first round pick, who also has had a six steal game this year.
You could just play a six man outfield and like a no man infield to see what happens. But I wouldn't do that.
May work with them because, you know, they do also with their pitching staff, you know, they do get a lot of strikeouts.
Yes. He just put Patrick Copen on the mound for a while and just let the outfielders kind of kill grass. But yeah, I when I first saw him last year, I think the first game I remember was the Dodgers versus Reds at the Cincinnati Complex. And I texted y'all or Slack y'all immediately. Like I said, in my super exaggerated way, this is a top 50 prospect in the sport right now, and hasn't been yet, but I think he's going to get there someday. I think he's going to get really up there someday, and he's making me look smart right now, and I hope he continues to do so for my own sanity and self-confidence.
Jeff, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go throw it back to a player that I've now covered, I think, for 5 years, dating back to his first summer on the Cape, and that's Ryan Ritter, shortstop with the Colorado Rockies. Had a three-homer game on Sunday, ended up making the hot sheet this week. I had written about him earlier in the week when I dug into some of the guys who have improved their swing and miss metrics, whether it's, you know, miss rate or in-zone whiff rate, as well as chase rate. And Ritter was one of the biggest chase rate droppers, had pretty decent contact kind of dating back to when he was in college, and was always sort of himself swinging himself into outs. There's some power there. There's good angles. He's a guy that does have the ability to find the barrel, is pretty good in the infield, can play a variety of different positions. I think, you know, long-term, I do think he can stick at shortstop. It's a good arm. The actions are clean. He's got a lot of range. But I think the improvement just in terms of swing decisions raises his floor quite a bit because it closes some of the holes and some of the question marks that we've sort of had about his game coming into the year. Big improvement, you know, obviously Albuquerque and the Pacific Coast League is a great place to hit. But I think it is notable that the swing decisions and the improvements there have led to a jump in EVs, which some of that can probably be explained by Albuquerque and the PCL as well. But, you know, when you look at a guy that's, you know, not striking out very much, he's walking at a much higher clip than he ever has in his career. He's hitting for more power than he ever has in his career, and he can defend. I think there is a chance this guy gets up to the big leagues this year. It's obviously, you know, he's not going to play shortstop. He's not going to replace Ezekiel Tovar, but I do think there's offensive upside here with a guy that can play a premium position. So I don't know if the Rockies would ever move him or where he ends up, but I do think he's a prospect to at least make note of. He's not a top 100 guy. He's not going to push probably into the Rockies top 10. But he is, you know, a really sort of interesting, underrated prospect that I think does, you know, at least deserve some spotlight, some attention for some of the improvement that he's made year over year.
And if there ever were a year in Colorado when you could afford to maybe see what you have on the farm with no risk, this would be it.
Honest, there have been a lot of years recently where you could do so without a whole lot of risk.
Aren't we tracking for this to be the worst season in history? Like, they looked at the White Sox last year and said,
yeah,
we could do this, but worse.
We've learned something. Tanking in baseball is not necessarily tanking, because we have a second straight season in a row now where a team is going to be flirting with the 62 Mets and do so in a year where they are not eligible to get a top 10.
Right. Player. Sometimes you just stink. That's kind of how it works.
I'll throw this out on Ritter. Like, you know, Adel Amador is playing second base right now. I don't think he should be in the big leagues. I think Ritter's a better defender. I think he's shown more in the upper minors in terms of what he can do as a hitter. So for me, I do think there's some opportunity there, but it is just hard to know and to predict how the Rockies are going to manage their active roster and their 40 man, because sometimes it doesn't always track logically.
I mean, you don't like the guy at second base who's literally throwing his glove at the ball?
Well, I do want him to get another 9 at bats, because then he'll never have to be ranked on a Rockies top 30 ever again.
Yeah.
But
speaking of which, JJ, this might have been your last chance to get Chandler Simpson on a soapbox, because he's, I think, 12 at bats away.
I will say, so far, I probably do have
another story.
I have another story in me at some point, which is that so far in the big leagues, his scouting report that we had has been very accurate. You know, I hope for his sake it becomes less accurate long term, because we said he can really hit, he can really run. He is a poor fielder right now, and that is the thing that is standing in his way. And I've watched, much like I did with Jack, I've watched every ball that he's had a chance to catch in the outfield. I've not watched every grounder, and there are some bad ones where, like, I think it'll get better, but his reads and routes, he's got to get better, because he needs to be a good defender. He can really run. Reads, jumps, and root in his routes are not there yet. But yeah, that's momentary Chandler Simpson moment of this.
It's one thing to be able to really run. It's another to run in the right direction.
Well, right? It actually keeps him from running, like even deploying his speed a lot of times, because the last thing you want to do, like as he gets better at the reads and the, you know, his routes, the last thing you want to do is tear off at full speed if you're not comfortable that you're going to end up at the intersection point with the ball. Because is there anything worse than, like, oh, he missed it. It, you know, like it fell behind him, or he overran it, or things like that.
That's like getting a speeding ticket while you're lost. Like,
I got there really quickly, but I didn't know where I was going.
I mean, not that I'm speaking from experience or anything.
But that is our prospect podcast for this week. We hope you enjoy it. For Jeff, for Josh, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.